wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
I don't know how many people are letting from some of these countries right now anyway.
Well, but
what I'm saying is he's going to make a hoo-ha out of the fact that it's very... And that's what I'm saying.
I assume he's going to make a hoo-ha. Let's see.
Okay.
He's going to make a hoo-ha. Hoo-ha is determined.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We're down in the... No, in separate studios due to the plague of the coronavirus. As you just heard, that is us discussing Donald Trump from our November 2016 show, Trump Predictions. When, after he won the election in 2016, we had a show where we predicted all the things he was going to do, and now...
Or not do.
Now, four and a bit years later, we are ready to total up our predictions. This was either going to be a show that went in the can for 4 years or 8 years. As it turned out, it was only 4 years.
Well, there was a point in time I think we had talked about... You know, would we revisit it like 6 months out or 1 year out or something? But as things turned out, they were moving too fast to justify that. So we went the heck the whole full 4 years. And I would note, you know, just as a starting point, it was November, like you said, of 2016. So it was post-election, but pretty short post-election. So in other words, we had not even had the benefit of the run-up to the actual inauguration, which would come two solid months after we did this recording.
Right.
So, like, to the extent the recordings, as we will discuss in more detail, our predictions are accurate or inaccurate, they might have been different had they been done 2 months later.
That's
like, in other words, four months ago today.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, isn't it? I mean, we made predictions before he physically took office.
Yeah.
And I think...
And even in the run-up, like, as the date approached, people could see more going on, whereas we were just literally like, guy just got elected, let's guess, you know, what's going to happen. And we might have already known by, say, like January 15th, like pre-inauguration, that maybe some of these things that we thought would happen are not exactly going to happen as expected, because everybody's picking fights already.
That's true. And I'm going to say this, if inauguration day is always the 20th, I think that there are potentially three versions of this show. There's the one we did. There's one we could have done on January 15th, and then there would have been one that we might have done on January 25th. And I would imagine that all three sets of predictions could have been wildly different.
This is true.
So just to give people a run-up, we went through we just randomly picked sort of policy points or sort of predictions based on things that he was going to do.
Some of them were promises. Some of them things that he had promised to do and would it really happen.
Yes.
Others were just general predictions about how things would go.
Yeah.
Because it was obviously he wasn't promising everything that ended up happening or that we wanted to predict around. But a number of them, like, you know, we'll talk about in more detail, but things like the wall and things like Obamacare, and that he had made a bunch of campaign promises, and parts of it was, will this stuff really happen?
Well, so we started off with sort of like a funny prediction. Which was, when will it be safe to go back on Facebook? Because as always, in a world of social media, you know, that's how we're all communicating this day. If I'm actually looking correctly, you didn't actually make a prediction, but
no,
I remember I made a prediction of about 2.5 weeks.
Because I don't use Facebook, so.
Well, but I think frankly, if politics is not your thing, the correct answer for when was it safe to go back on social media is probably going to be about 4.5 years. I think we were all kidding ourselves. Do you know what I mean? Like social media.
No, you described it in such a way. I mean, you said mid-February. So again, it was a few months after we had spoken about it, but it was like a thought that everything would die down.
Yes.
Business as usual would recommence and people would go back to sharing their cat videos and pictures of their grandparents and grandchildren and things. But as we know, it's still not safe to go there, and I'm not sure it ever will be again.
Well, I think it depends when different bans that he is under are lifted.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the thing is, it's not just him anymore, right? You know, like, whereas obviously he had a lot of, it's not like he didn't know he had supporters, but it's become much more of a devoted following.
I am going to say this. Great is the wrong word, but the most revealing thing about this period in history, and I'm now going to talk specifically about the difference between, you know, publications and the internet. With publications, whether it be the newspaper or books or whatever it may be, I think as a society, we have an inherent sort of in our subconscious, an inherent notion that there has been some level of sort of pre-vetting of anything that gets published, right? Whereas, because the point I'm going to make
media
is
generally,
what I've discovered, and maybe I'm slow to the party, the internet really is the Wild West. There is no the man on the internet quietly going, oh, you can't say that, that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you watch TV or you buy the newspaper, in our subconscious, there's something that sort of gives the format legitimacy. The internet...
Well, there are a set of, debatable whether everybody follows them all, but there are certain sets of journalistic ethics that say, you know, people go to school, that most of the larger institutions that put out a newspaper, they at least have a group that says, or TV news, they have a group that says, here's what you can do or what you can't do, or a set of principles. Obviously, they flex around it. And there's two different – there's opinion, right? There's opinion things and fact reporting. And even if you – I'm not even thinking about the bias in this stuff because everybody's got some degree of bias.
Right.
We can all debate about which side is actually more biased. But the entire lack of facts associated with the internet is that it's irrelevant. You can just say things are no matter what you want to do. I had a friend who years ago – as internet was advancing, he was talking about how he wasn't getting a newspaper anymore because he said, what's the point? I can get all the news directly from the things that are happening. You know, people just be out there. They'll put it on their blog. They'll put it on the internet. Well, little did we know that we should have known that just your average Joe on the street may not be the most reliable narrator of the facts.
Right.
Like if you're really trying to replace your newspaper with something on the internet, you can't really count on the fact that they'll have any sense of having to report it accurately or not.
Well, and this is what I was going to say. I think there is a whole swath of the population who, I'm not trying to insult anyone or be controversial or anything like that when I say this. In the same way that what I've just said about I have a subconscious that what's on TV or the newspaper has at some level been vetted.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a large percentage of the population that have just transferred those values to the internet. But what we've discovered after 4 years is actually no. If you have a subconscious sense that, well, if it's on the internet, it must be kind of true, you're in for a big shock. Because anyone, including the likes of you and I, can access the internet and throw stuff up there. And I think the biggest thing about this presidency has been to underscore this notion that the internet, that it is, it's like this sort of just big galaxy with no, there's no floor, there's no ceiling, there's no wall, there's nothing there. Do you know what I mean? There's no principles of behavior on the internet.
That's obvious, I think. No, I don't mean cast aspersions what you said by saying it's obvious, but I think people have gotten accustomed to that. The other piece of it that I think when you think about the psychology of it, and I think this is especially a problem for the oldest generation. No, we're the indeterminate middle age. And so we have some of this problem. This is both a negative and it's going to give me hope for the future. The negative is that I think there's a generation that's 25 years older than us or whatever number of years older than us that came to regard things in print and videos as being accurate inherently. In other words,
yes.
This stuff is out there. And so I'm not even thinking about the big people. It's just when you get a video sent, you know, through a blog or through a Twitter posting, people go, look at that. It's factual. It's true. It must be. I don't even mean that like a – it's like at a psychological level. They tend to trust it more.
Right.
But so that becomes a problem, obviously, because all this stuff can be manipulated. And we have outright manipulation of video and other types of documents out there. But the plus is that I think people who are 20 years old or whatever now, they know it's all bogus. Like they don't believe the stuff that's out there. Hopefully by the time we migrate through all this stuff, the internet information that's provided will be treated with the proper respect or lack of respect, as the case may be, because people will have experienced it and have grown up with it and know that, no, those aren't true things. That's garbage that's out there. And these are whatever it is that becomes a hallmark of accuracy, whether it's just, you know, you follow enough of it and that, you know, oh, this thing has proved to be accurate from time to time.
All of us will have a subconscious a bit like that old publication, The Onion. When we go on the internet, we will instantly know if this is a made-up story.
Right.
So anyway, we don't want to get bogged down too much on the internet. We were both wrong. Yeah. You didn't answer, I said mid-February, and the answer is never.
We're keeping score just like our movie predictions.
So you keep score. So you can, Yeah. And I think the next thing on the list was Obama was no, was the wall. Yeah. And why don't I have a clip for that, too? So hold your horses. Here's a clip.
Question I'm asking.
OK,
is he building something in 4 years?
Yes. That
covers the full length.
No.
All right, then there's two no's. There okay, you go.
All right.
So we haven't disagreed on anything, which is fine.
Okay.
But we had to pick something.
But I
know when you redo these things.
No, I'm going to get my asterisks in early. Some sort of laser beam thing that sets off an alarm like in one of those heist movies, that might exist. Because you just put one here and one there and you set up the laser beam like in Ocean's 12 or Entrapment or in one of those movies.
All right.
Or any of those movies where people are stealing diamonds.
Okay.
Okay.
So briefly, I think we need a little noise each time we ended up with, like, say, we're back to 2021.
Okay.
You know, just because people won't be able to tell, like, you just started talking there.
The bell is the end of the clip.
Yeah.
I only picked that clip about the wall because in listening back to that show, as you're now going to explain to everyone, figuring out the wall prediction was actually the hardest of all of them.
It was, and it totally bogged us down. I really thought we were never going to make it through because we had quite a few things. Because what does it mean to successfully build a wall? I mean, like, you could add his overt promise was, we're going to build a wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. It's going to be big, beautiful. It's going to cover everything. And we immediately, like, nobody believed that right out of the gate.
Right.
But so we were like, well, does it really mean a fence, or does it mean all of it? Or does it mean, you know, like, we didn't even get into the element of people paying for it. We just said, hey, listen, does the thing get built at all? And so, like, it's hard to figure it out. So that's why I think that last bit was there. I was trying to pin down to, like, listen, let's just make it, or is he going to build a whole wall that goes the whole length kind of thing? And that's where you added in your laser beams. There's a lot of talk of laser beams, just so everybody knows.
Well, and I want to say, and even now, 4 years later, I still think that just in terms of border security, that is a missed opportunity. There's something that you've got to be able other I'm now about to realize that all those heist movies where things are protected by laser
beams. I'm not sure laser beams would do it. Maybe cameras.
It's just fixed. I don't know, just it's like cameras. A made up movie thing. Like, yeah. you can't actually guard diamonds with, like, a laser beam thing. And I've now discovered
plus
that all
in the
those
movies,
movies
they're always visible. So what's the point? You know, if you can see with a laser beam, you know.
But I still feel that, like, it's a that would have been a cheap. Well, and I'm going to say this seriously. We were both wrong on the wall, but he was wrong because he showed absolutely no ability to think outside of the box. What I'm saying is this. He used the wall as a campaign promise. But what I'm saying is, rather than, it kind of started with this notion about border security, but then because he doesn't really go too deep into these things, everything became about, is he building a wall or not? And ultimately, success or failure of that part of his campaign would be judged on, did he build a physical barrier? And maybe what he should have done in hindsight was, I'm going to improve border security.
Yes, but that, see, I mean,
but that's not very interesting.
It doesn't get you elected.
No,
I mean, that's going to say, like, you know, I don't think it's a lack of foresight. I think it was a sales pitch, right?
Yes.
Like, if I tell everybody, I mean, I'm going to have a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. I mean, who believed? I mean, I guess there was a segment of people, but it's not even like the people who voted for him really believed that. They just believed he was going to get tighter in border security. But, you know, it's hard to say things like, and we're going to have tightened security with laser beams maybe and some cameras or other things like that. That doesn't sell, which put him in the corner of, like, the promise is clearly broken. I mean, he didn't build a wall that covers everything. It's not even a wall anywhere. It's these bollards that apparently everybody can show that you can climb over, cut through, and do all these other things. And it's the number, like, so we used for a number of these things, we're using PolitiFact Trumpometer, which has just a page. If you go to their Trumpometer, it has a page of the promises he made. It doesn't apply to all of our stuff, but promises he made and how they gauge it as kept or broken. Although on this one, there was a big article in Politico that we were using as a point of measurement. So it's interesting because it's 400 some. I mean, it's not insignificant, but lots of it was just replacing his stuff. I don't even want
to. Well, and to be fair,
he didn't build a wall.
The 400 miles sounds like a lot, but it's actually relatively insignificant when the border length is nearly 2,000.
Right.
So you're right. He never built a wall. I'm not sure who paid for it other than perhaps the army. I have no idea what happened.
Well, yeah, there's a part in it that like I'm talking about the budgeting, but apparently like he didn't even really get most of it budgeted. He diverted money that was for the Defense Department into the wall because he couldn't get enough money from the Congress to pay for much more than a few miles of it.
All right, so that's got a wall.
Point there.
And you're keeping score. I already have a sense I'm not doing very well. Let's move on.
It's
the
tied.
Next.
Well, tied one,
well
one.
I guess for me, actually, based on my history in any of our prediction shows, I'm doing amazingly right now because it's tied. The next subject, the very next question we asked ourselves was, will he repeal Obamacare? Here is part of our conversation from November 2016.
All those bits might survive in one form or another. They'll just be called something else.
So then you're saying he's not repealing it.
He's repealing Obamacare. Will he completely change the health care law?
You're basically saying he's changed. No, completely changed. Like, so here's what I'm going to say.
Don Fudging.
Yes, I know.
But I'm not going to mean this seriously now. Obamacare has become the Moby Dick of laws. Captain Ahab needs to get his Moby Dick.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got to do something.
So he's got to do something, but in actuality, I'm not entirely... He himself has said that there's some good bits in there.
Oh, yeah. No, well, and so this is, in all seriousness, this is one area which is kind of funny because he's busy. He has said, unlike a lot of other predictions he's made where people be like, oh, my goodness, he's talking hyperbolic.
Oh, really? Oh, he didn't mean any of this stuff?
Yeah. Well, on this one,
there's the clip. Can I comment before I turn it over to you?
A lot of the clips have like all your jabs and your funny moments.
Yeah, but you have some ones from late coming up later.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so I've balanced it out as always.
It's like the best of.
Yes. I do want to say this before you sort of go in there to break it down. I was correct in this notion that it's his sort of Moby Dick. Because if you think back, he spent 2017 to 2019 desperately trying to twist Paul Ryan's hand and anyone else to repeal Obamacare. And in a strange way, it's even beyond that.
Remember, people forget because the past few years, but the first 2 years, he had both houses. You know, he had Republicans, and they basically said no. They turned him down flatly for this repeal idea. But I can go into more details there. But yeah, like it didn't. He could have potentially done it, but he actually ran into interference from his own party, from the Republican Party, as much as he did from the Democrats. Obviously, the Democrats stood behind it.
It is the one area where he point blank failed.
Yeah,
because to be fair, you, to what you just said, even post the midterms in 2018. The reality is Trump put three dudes on the Supreme Court. I don't know. I didn't look this up to see if any other president in history had that much influence over the making of the Supreme Court during their time. I think Obama was, what, two? I think George W. Bush was two.
Not recent. Nobody. Well, Reagan had O'Connor and... Reagan's and Bush's a little overlap, meaning Bush.
Those
senior,
were eight-year stretches as well.
Yeah, yeah, that was 12 years, including all that. So I get it's kind of muddled there. But.
So what I'm saying is, while Trump got to play every card imaginable to do something to Obamacare. It is one area where he completely failed.
Yeah. So the one thing you could say he had a success, and so the part that I had said was that. I thought he would succeed in repealing two things. Right. One is the mandate that people get insurance, and then the mandate that employers, I can't remember what the employer mandate was, didn't do anything with the employer piece of it. They did under the tax law. The way the individual mandate works is you have to pay a penalty. It's essentially a tax. And this is how it actually stood up in the Supreme Court when it was challenged, was that, oh, this was a part of the taxing power. And so therefore they could assess this tax or whatever it was anyway. So what they did in that tax law is they zeroed out the penalty. In other words, they didn't change any of the rules about the fact that you had to have it, but you didn't have to pay anything if you didn't. So like there was no real effect. So that's as close as it got to something being repealed through some legislative action. The thought was, to some extent, once that fell down, because that was the basis on which it had been withheld withstood challenges before by taking that out. They would. There's actually a Supreme Court case that's the decision won't come in until this year. That's challenging it all based on all these little twists and turns it's taken. So it's still vulnerable, but he didn't repeal it.
I was going to say that if he's able to claim ever to claim some sort of victory on it, it will come to reference that court case that the Supreme Court are looking at. It will come way after the fact.
Right. I didn't think about. I mean, like. Listen, so the first, this is a slight tangent, but when we did the first one, we talked about how we weren't going to get political. It's going to be very hard for me not to get too political now at this point after 4 years of it. But, you know, a lot of the thought is like, how much do we have to deal with Trump from here on out? And I hadn't even thought about if the Supreme Court for some reason overturns Obamacare based on these tweaks he did while he was there and succeeded in, he will claim credit, right? Yes. Like, so if like sometime in mid-2021, he's suddenly going to be on whatever social media forum he tries to invent on his own, or Parler, or whatever the heck it's going to be, he'll claim some credit. And I don't really like that idea.
I prefer
not to hear from him anymore.
To be fair, though, we both said he would, so we're both wrong. So it continues to be a draw.
No, there's no points to be awarded there.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. And I have a clip just for something that we have about 8 or 9 clips we're going to play over the course of the show. And I'm actually, some of these clips were picked to show how prescient we were in terms of things that not necessarily what he would do.
You know,
but how he would get sidelined into areas, how he would get sort of sidetracked into areas.
All right. I think I know. I'm not even sure. I know, but assuming it's the clip, I think I'll let me say something right after we talk about it.
Okay. Because this is the question. The question on the table was, will he withdraw from NAFTA? Will he renegotiate? I'm not going to lie. Just looking at the spreadsheet, we are all over the place. But we did have this discussion based on NAFTA.
Actually, more debatable. Will he withdraw from NAFTA? So not NAFTA for people that know.
I'm coming strong.
Yeah. Well, do you know what it is?
Yeah, it's not one of the things I didn't. Just because I'm a foreign.
All right, just checking. What does it stand for?
North American Free Trade Agreement.
There you go. So this is the agreement amongst Mexico, Canada, and United States that freed up trade. It has been, at least certainly people would say, what it's freed up.
Who does Greenland belong to?
You know, I don't know, but I flew over it when I was over in Scotland and I got some great pictures. I think so.
So how come
there's like nothing there?
But still, they should be in it.
Are they even in North America?
Oh, they're up there, aren't they? Hmm. Or are they part of Canada? If you know out there, please email us.
Well, Canada would be part of North America.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Is Greenland its own country?
It's not Canada. I think it's its own country. But you know, have you ever seen a team from Greenland?
No, but that doesn't mean they don't have something.
So maybe it's not maybe it's more like Antarctica and people just have some space on it.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. Anyway. If you know, please email us. Detective Mike, jump on that. So anyway, yes.
This is the area detecting.
So before we talk about like the particulars of it, you know, you mentioned like how we predicted something there. I don't know if we predicted as much as we could sense. It's almost like a psychic kind of sense of impression of what will be going on in the world. You know, like the fact that Greenland became a story for a different reason. Maybe we couldn't totally get our hands around it, but it was no accident that we spoke about Greenland because some sort of sixth sense in your brain was attuned to the possibilities of what happens. Like when they talk about like psychics,
right?
Psychic, just because they can just read all the, like, they don't even know what they're seeing as much as they think they're seeing a ghost, but what they're really reading is people's expressions and all these pieces and all this. So that's, I think that's what happened with Greenland.
Cause I think,
by the way, I finally looked up, it is a part of North America and we do know it's its own country because of the whole story about him buying it.
Well, he wanted to buy it, but apparently, though, don't Denmark have ownership over it? Because I remember when it all came out about maybe I can buy Greenland, and the Denmark like embassy released a statement saying no, it's actually not for sale. Because I think at some level Denmark have some sort of
maybe it's kind of like the British Empire kind of thing, except it's still a little bit under their domain.
So
like people are operating there under some grant. But anyway, it is part of North America, at least that part.
I want to say one thing. This is one area where yourself, the show, and Trump were perfectly in line in that none of us really knew what the deal was with Greenland.
That's true. Yeah.
So in terms of NAFTA, what eventually happened?
So he –
They just got renamed.
We were using the phrase withdrew – but it wasn't really a withdrawal type of things. I mean, I think he threatened to, which led to the negotiation of the, it has the worst act. It's like CFTA or CCM. Wow, what the heck it is. It's a Mexican Canadian free trade. In other words, it doesn't have a cool thing where you can say it. It's actually an acronym. So it is a replacement treaty. It's renegotiated, but it is a full replacement. It's not like, you know, they said, oh, let's take this. They may have carried some language over, but it wasn't like, oh, let's edit this part of NAFTA and we'll call it NAFTA 2. It was from scratch. And so that was actually, I was fairly surprised. I didn't think it was going to happen. And we both had predicted no. And he really did do this. So I think we're 0 points on that is the simple answer.
Yeah, but I think that's very true. So that's NAFTA. The next one was summers until a movie president like Donald Trump. We were both wrong. You said 2017 that summer. I said 2018. I'm thinking across all the summer movies for the last 4 years, there haven't been any.
No, and I went looking just to see. I'm like, maybe there's something I'm not thinking of and say, you know, Trump. Type characters in movies and Trump in movies, and it was all stuff from before he was president, you know, when he was in Home Alone and some other things.
Well, and that was the interesting thing. The Home Alone, there is a movement out there that apparently Macaulay
Culkin, write him out.
Yeah, to digitally remove him from those movies, but he's also lost this SAG card. Did you see that this week?
No, they took him out of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, because obviously he had to be in it because he's appeared in a couple of movies, but and I don't quite know what the status is if you make a cameo in a film, if you actually have to join SAG. But obviously, even on reality TV, because he was The Apprentice, you know, while I don't know if contestants have to join SAG, but because he and his different people were on it regularly, he definitely had to have a SAG membership in order to have a weekly television show. And so he's either his membership is up for review. I can't remember. I read it somewhere this week. Either his membership is up for review or they've just unilaterally decided to revoke his SAG membership. But I think the correct answer for summer movies until president, a Trump-like president, the answer actually could be forever.
Well, no, I mean, somebody's like, you know, they're going to come up with some stuff about him, whether it's comedy or, you know, he's going to appear. Now, I assume we don't count Borat. The Borat sequel. I mean, he's not in it. There may be some clips of him, but I don't even remember that. His lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, gets a featured role.
Listening to the show, though, the prediction was...
It's not what we predicted.
No, we predicted would there be a character that was clearly modeled on Trump. And Borat, which deals with real people in, you know, obviously set up situations, wouldn't count anyway. Because if he did appear on, like Rudy Giuliani, despite his defense, is being himself on Borat. So he's not playing a character like Rudy Giuliani. He's playing Rudy Giuliani.
Sorry, I'm backed away from the microphone while I type something. So the one thing he did, there was a character for him, was Comey Rule. The Comey Rule, which was a 2-part miniseries, but really just a longer movie that was on Showtime.
But it doesn't count because it's himself.
No, I know. Again, I'm just coming at things that were okay. that are close to it. And I'm trying to remember who the heck the actor is who played him. Brendan
Gleeson.
Yeah. And it was like this. It wasn't comedic. It was very. It definitely wasn't comedic. It was supposed to be true, but it really portrayed him as horrible. So I imagine we're going to see versions of that. It would be interesting to see if Brendan Gleeson gets any other chances to play Donald Trump.
So obviously you've watched that. I mean, is his interpretation of Trump is it to the extent where you go, yeah, that's Trump, or is it clearly a dude playing?
No, it's Trump. I mean, it's the true story, at least from Comey's perspective. Okay. And you know, it does. I think it paints him in a rather more rosy light, meaning Comey, the former FBI director. But it's you know, 100% Trump, and it's supposed to be real things he said and did that as reported by Comey. And
because I was about to say, Trump in a strange way, he's almost a tough role to inhabit because.
You should watch it. It's good. It's very good. I recommend to anybody who has Showtime or if it's showing up in any other locations to watch it. It's well done.
My point was, you know, you can have something on TV and you can sort of almost do a caricature of Trump. But what I'm saying is Trump in real life is almost a caricature of a person.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that a bit later. Okay. So let
no
me see
there either.
We'll keep on moving. We asked a question about NATO. Take action that is a break from the past, withhold money, remove country. You said yes, I said no. I couldn't figure out what the... He definitely hassled some people about paying more.
Yes, and that's the thing. I was going to claim credit for this
okay,
one.
Okay, I'll give it to you. That,
because he did like threaten everybody, really, about like they were not putting enough money in, and he did enough saber-rattling that I do think it led to some shifts there.
Yeah.
He didn't withdraw. We said he wasn't going to withdraw, but I'll claim that point.
All right, so the next one, will he repeal Dodd-Frank?
Yeah, this one's my department, too.
Yeah, so explain. pick the winner. I didn't know what Dodd-Frank was, so I just said no.
It's the law that led to all these things, and so I actually came out, like, stone-cold accurate, but that's only fair because it's sort of my area of employment.
Okay.
And I realized in listening it back, it was really too painful for people to listen. Sometimes I give you a hard time for going on for a long time, but I really went on too long about the technicalities of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But in any event, there was this legal appeal. It changed the fact that the director is unilaterally appointed. So the big thing, it changed a bit of the structure. I had said on it, I think that's what's going to happen. And because there was talk about creating a commission that would run it, that did not happen. So it did exactly what I was expecting or was predicting it to happen. So I'm going to claim another point there.
And frankly, you do claim the point, because I remember listening back to the original show and doing the notes. I tried to do one of my sort of super trifecta bets where I'd said that I didn't know what Dodd-Frank was, and then I claimed that he wouldn't change it, but he would change it if he couldn't change Obamacare. He didn't change Obamacare, right. So technically I am wrong, because I went in, I created some fancy bet to cover myself, and as it is, my fancy bet then caused me to lose the category anyway. The next one was, will Trump get his name on something?
Not that I know of yet. I mean,
no. And I said yes. I thought because my sort of understanding of how the legislative system works, I thought he would get his name on something somehow, but he didn't.
You know, we don't have a prediction. I'm not sure I said anything about it, so I don't make a point on this one.
Okay. Because again, I think we only brought up because the notion with Obamacare is that Obamacare isn't Obamacare's official name. Whereas everyone talks about it like it's called that. But Obamacare is not Dodd-Frank. Obamacare is its nickname. It's the Affordable Care Act.
I'm trying to think
nicknamed
if Trump's
Obamacare.
Nickname is on anything other than rioters.
Yeah.
But no, I guess not. I mean, the MAGA stuff stuck as like a shorthand for a lot of things. But
yeah.
But I don't think there's like Trumpanistas or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure it's appeared in a newspaper, but it's not a standard phrase.
All right, let's go with the next one, and I'm playing a clip.
I'm savvy enough to give you some of these things, because then when they only half come up, I call you completely wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Somehow, the way this is developing, I'm not quite sure it's going to play out super well. Like, it's not going to be like the movie preview where they made more than they're gross.
Look, we've tried doing it the simple way, and I've lost. Yeah. Buddy in the Warners is really the only way I have any chance of ever winning one of these things.
I wrote this down as, will he deport non-criminal illegal immigrants?
My answer is yes.
Oh, I think the answer in that is almost definitely no at this point.
Oh, no, I think some will get deported by accident.
I mean, is he like, so he talked about deporting everybody who's illegal, but he's already...
I can see the hate mail.
He is already...
Yeah, this is a confusing one, too, because we bounced around criminal, non-criminal, and things like that. And to my mind... Like, it was certainly in the news that people were getting caught up, separated, all that stuff. But it doesn't seem that he changed people coming in.
Yes.
You know, and he filtered people out. He kept them on the other side of the border. He split up the families. He kicked people out. And there certainly was a level of deportation of people who are already here. But from what I read and news things, it really wasn't any different than it was in the past. I mean, Obama was known to have done quite a bit of deportation of people too. So according to PolitiFact, that is a promise broken, but it's weird because it feels like it was kept.
Well, that was the thing. I think ultimately there are a lot of people trying to get in who got turned back. But the notion somehow that he was able to round up people already here and send them home, if the PolitiFact says no, then I guess he never made
it. It's like you definitely heard stories about people who had been here for 20 years and who had now just been done there. But I think even they were folks who had some criminal thing. Like, yes. I don't think they just went around and grabbed somebody because they had gotten into the country illegally. It was because they had some little crime in their past that in the past people would have let go. I'm going to go with this. I mean, either way, we really... Your answer was yes by accident. And yeah. I guess, you know, that could be, I'm sure somebody by accident was kicked out, but I don't think either one of us was right. So.
All right. Let's see. Let's burn through a couple more of these. And then I'm actually going to play a predictive clip that had nothing to do with Trump that you made or that the show made. Let me see. I think it's interesting. We'd gone back and forth on that one because even we weren't sure the difference between criminal and non-criminal and legal and illegal and all kinds of stuff. But we'd written down that he was, I'm wrong, because he never actually systematically deported people, which
I'm not claiming any point here. There's more points to be gotten elsewhere.
Okay. Let me see. The next one was the Muslim linked ban. We're both wrong.
Well, so this, I emailed you about this beforehand. You have us as both wrong, but what I said was it wouldn't be Muslim, but it would be based on nations, and that's exactly what he did. And it was upheld when it was challenged. So yeah, I think I'm right on this one.
Okay.
Well, I was, because that's, you know, like it was not, I'm, you know, you couldn't get away with something where you literally just did it based on the religions, but he did it on countries that were predominantly Muslim with the ultimate effect of he can claim credit for having enacted a ban. I guarantee you Stephen Miller claims credit.
Yeah, that's true. Let me see. The next one was days before a New York Post pun headline. And I remember I had claimed, what's the rule in The Price is Right that you can't go over? And that, 'cause I remember we'd had a discussion about that and we were both wrong because the New York Post had the New York Post on the day of the inauguration had their headline that morning was Dawn of a New Day.
Yeah, which really, to be honest, it was very dumb of us to not realize that it would come out the first day. I mean, like, why wouldn't it come out the first day? They have to fit a pun in. It wouldn't have to, like, I think we were thinking much more in terms of, like, something negative or something unusual happening and then fitting in a pun where we hadn't thought about just the fact of he has arrived.
You know? I should get half a point, though, because I did say in the notes that it would be a play on his first name.
What's funny is listening back to it, at the beginning of it, you were talking all these – we were all talking last name. And then at the very end of the discussion, you're suddenly like, oh, it'll be some first name thing. And it did end up being for Donovan, which, by the way, like we were thinking, I'm not even sure that's that great a pun.
It's actually pretty weak. And you could get very difficult and say, well, it was on the morning of the inauguration, so the headline actually exists before he comes, before that's he becomes president. Yeah, yeah. So you could actually go back in there. And I actually took a moment the other day to try and research New York Post pun headlines, but I was just like,
I think you deserve a point here because we didn't officially implement the New York Times, the Price is Right rule. So I, even though you're over, you're still closer.
Okay. So I'll get the point. Let me see. I want to stop and actually just play this quick clip to show that we were just generally predictive 4 years ago. And this has nothing to do with President Trump.
My brother sent me, I think somebody from his school invented, nitro, like is Guinness, those things, a nitro charged coffee is apparently the new thing where where people can make nice coffee, put it in a keg and like basically carbonate it to give it that creaminess that a Guinness has.
So and I only played that because I didn't have my first nitro coffee until 2 years ago when we did the bike. Remember when we did the rental bike show?
Yeah.
And then after we were out there, you said, oh, there's a Compass Coffee. And that was the first time I ever had coffee.
They have the nitro on tap. But not only that, I mean, true evidence that it became a pervasive thing is Starbucks has it. They have nitro cold brew available all their places. And you can even get it in cans, like not at Starbucks, where it's like a can of Starbucks cold brew nitro coffee. So it has the little widget like the cans of Guinness do to put the nitro bubbles in there. So I don't know if I get a prediction thing. It was really just having read the thing that my
I'm not getting, you're not going to claim a point.
I'm just saying, I don't even know if, I know it doesn't count as a, again, it's kind of like the Greenland thing. And you could just kind of tell something's in the air.
No, but I actually picked that clip just to show our listeners, you know, we know what we're talking about.
We're ahead of the curve.
That's a true prediction.
I mean, even though we're getting all these things wrong.
Yeah, yeah, we're correct.
We do know some things about the future.
Although I'm sure the chief science advisor of the show will be unhappy because technically it's his prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really ours.
Yeah.
So the next one was, I think the next one was, will he reauthorize waterboarding? And let's quickly do that. And then I'm going to play a clip to show how, talking of us being right, how wrong I was about Trump.
Yeah, like this is the most right thing we were. Because yes. Not only did he didn't do it, but I don't think he really even tried. Like, it was this talk about, like, he was going to bring it back, and nobody even made a feint at it, which actually kind of leads into your clip.
Okay, so let me play that.
You know, I'm trying to think of a metaphor.
Rubber hits the road.
It's this sort of, you almost have a conversion that all of a sudden you're behind the door and you're now realizing how, sure, with this sort of thing, sausage gets made. Mm-hmm. And anything you've said on the campaign trail completely melts away because you are now in a position of, you are making real world decisions. And when you're in a room full of CIA people who say A, then it doesn't matter that you've spent 6 months saying B and C. A is how the world turns.
I mean,
and what I mean is, I do believe, especially with, you know, again, I feel like for any candidate, but maybe this one, because of the extreme nature of some of the rhetoric on the campaign trail, it's going to be very different on January whatever, when he's actually in there and he's getting the security briefing and six experts are looking at him saying, look, here's the real deal. And so...
Yeah.
Well, so you'd sent me an email this week, and let me preface this. We've just been correct about the waterboarding prediction. We both said that he wouldn't reauthorize it. But I played that clip. You'd send me an email where you'd said to me, yeah, I've listened back to the show. It's amazing how optimistic we were. And yeah. I played that clip because even at some level, I'd believed that, and I'm wrong. I believed that once he had the job, there'd be some notion of it would play out somewhere along the lines of previous presidents, with a sense of, I'm running the country, the campaign is finished, now you get on with things. I couldn't have been more wrong on that clip, because one day after the inauguration, he went down to the CIA and just started insulting everyone. So there was never this moment where Trump, the candidate, never changed. He just became Trump president, but Trump president is the same as Trump candidate.
I thought two things would happen. One is that he would moderate his stuff. That was all rhetorical to get in the office, but he would listen to the people around there. And I also thought the institutions like the CIA, the Pentagon, all these things and all the agencies would be strong enough to convince him otherwise, right? Like to show him, right? And what we found out is, not only is he like didn't care about any of them, he was affirmatively opposed to a number of these places. Like his intelligence people, what was the whole quote early on where it's like, oh, I trust my own gut better than I do these intelligence briefings? And everybody talked about, and like, this is not a rumor, like he didn't listen to any intelligence briefings. No. They all realized he wasn't listening to them, so they had to like turn him into little PowerPoints and crayon pictures or whatever to get him to hear anything. And he didn't really take any heed of them. It's just amazing. Like, you know, I did use the phrase optimistic, and I don't know if that's really right. I don't know if I felt optimistic, but there was like that was a crazy thing that happened, that Trump got elected. But, you know, how different could it be, right?
No, yeah, I think you're right. Optimistic isn't quite the word, but there was this sort of notion of self-comfort that, you know, that whoever ends up president ends up conforming to the job. And in a strange way, you can be the most powerful man in the world, but the job actually there are certain moments when the job is quite restrictive. You can't just you don't get to just go and do whatever you want when you wake up every morning. And yet ultimately, I think Trump woke up every morning and tried to do whatever he wanted. There wasn't any notion of conforming to the office the of unwritten the presidency.
Rules. Yeah, the unwritten rules about like how you conduct these things, where he just said, to heck with it, I don't care. Which, I guess, like, listen, that's what people shake things up do. But I just didn't realize to what extent he would even be interested. That's not even it. It's just that what would did he really want to shake up that much? It always just seemed like a whim that he ran for this stuff. He'd be in control. And then he just he kept going, you know. And so, I mean, I guess kudos to him for having actual beliefs, or like, you know, like he had a he had something. I don't know if a plan is the right word, but he had a set of perspectives that he actually followed through on, whereas we were counting on the fact that it was all garbage coming,
right?
You know, that made me think of something else that I've forgotten now. I was going to tell people, you know, if you want to refresh your recollection of how you might have felt at the time, it's not the craziest thing to go listen to. I mean, like, listen, you don't need to listen to our thing the whole way through if you go back the 4 years and listen to it. But if you go and listen to it, you might suddenly be reminded. It's like, oh yeah, we weren't like totally freaking out. Like, we're playing these little clips, and that's why I mentioned we should have some clips just to have people have a sense of like where our heads were at the time, because I think that's where everybody's heads were at.
Yes.
But it's also a chance for me to plug the fact that we're on Spotify now too. So like, you can just go on to it's so convenient now if you have Spotify. You can I just scroll right down to the 2016. Podcast, there it was, click, boom, can listen to it.
November,
you don't have to have your own like apps, and you even I think it's even easier than iTunes. So
and just as an aside, because as always we always spend a few moments talking about ourselves, this is our highest rated month ever before this show has even been published.
Oh, and we know what kind of numbers the word Trump gets.
Huge. Yes, so this could be we could be moving into a new, just temporarily, into a new stratosphere of podcasting. Right. Let's move on. Will he reopen the Iran deal? You were right. You said yes. I said no. I said he wouldn't touch it.
I can't really claim I remember why I thought that was going to happen, but it didn't happen. So,
the next one, the Paris Treaty.
This one, you got totally right.
Yes.
You said it was, and I thought, no way. What's it going to be? Because I kind of thought it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like a real commitment to the environmental stuff, but he decided there was enough of a PR element, and you know, he wanted to make the news by withdrawing just to make a statement. Even at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And we've already rejoined it, by the way. You know, like Biden was like his first thing was executive, because it was an executive war, you could go in and out. It wasn't even like a ratified treaty. We're already back into it. So I guess in a way we're back in the same place as we were before. Right. But I was wrong. So you got a point there and I didn't.
Will Hillary be indicted? We both said no and kind of poo-pooed it.
Yeah.
That's actually one thing where
he came closer than I would have guessed, right? Like, he pushed a lot on investigations and things like that. And I kind of thought, again, he would go, what's the point? I've won. I'll just put her in the dustbin of history by not talking about her. But he kept going at it because it was red meat for the followers.
Yes. And it's the one area where if we've made the statement earlier in the show that we kind of believe that he would run on, I'd taken the position that he's going to run on one set of things and he's going to do something else when he's in there. But clearly he didn't. To be fair, part of his appeal as a politician is he says he's going to do something and then he tries to do it. This is one area where he actually failed, because he ran that whole campaign on lock her up and she's a criminal. And you're right, he kind of sort of, you know, took a few swings at investigations, but he never really committed to trying to get her indicted. So in a strange way, he failed.
This is a good example of the institutions actually standing up. Despite all the people he put in and out of justice and FBI, they never like sort of said, okay, let's just go ahead and indict her just to make him happy.
All right. So I think the next category is the one where the rubber hits the road and you've written the whole thing. Will he be impeached? You said yes. But you did sort of...
I insisted on odds, basically.
Yes, you said the odds were not high.
I thought the possibility were so rare that, you know, it did come... Like, I talked a lot about would he stumble into something, which I think is what he did with the Ukraine thing. It wasn't like a big conspiracy, you know, like a big plan, or it was just
no,
like...
No, just incompetence.
He thinks it's okay.
Yeah.
Considering he defends the phone call by saying it was a perfectly appropriate call, and yet he was impeached for that... clearly there's a difference of opinion. He didn't realize what he was getting himself into. But we made it a 4-pointer. I think I tried to ask for 5 points and you talked me down to 4 points, that I would get odds on it. I'm just kind of wondering, since he's impeached twice, do I get 8 points or do I just get the 4 points?
You only get the 4 points. Okay. Because to be fair, you said that yes, he'd get impeached, but the odds are not high. So that if you get impeached twice, I don't want to hear that the odds are not high on getting impeached twice. Yeah. I said he would resign first, and that is my biggest surprise of the last couple of weeks, is that he didn't resign. Even after the riot, sedition, secession, whatever, so many new words I've learned about basically people getting out of control occurred after the January 6th riot. I am surprised that he did not. I'm still surprised that he didn't resign and do a Nixon where Nixon resigned and Ford pardoned him. I thought that was the loop for the pardon, and I'm still surprised that he hasn't that he maybe never he resigned. Realized
at that point, Pence wasn't going to pardon.
No,
that feeds right into our next item, which is what was the question? It was
would he run for re-election?
Run for re-election, and you and others I knew had me sort of convinced that he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because again, it was sort of like he stumbled into this thing. He ends up being the president. Did he really want to be? You know, it's so much the better if he runs for 4 years, he does it for 4 years and he goes, look, I just wanted to shake things up and I don't need to do anything else. I don't want to keep going. And boy, he really wanted to keep going.
Yes.
It wasn't even close. He never thought about not running a second time around. He just loved his rallies and all that jazz. So, we were wrong on this stuff.
We were correct when we said, would he win? And obviously if I say he's not going to run, then by default, my answer is no, he's not going to win, but he didn't win. Then we had a funny one. Will Kanye run? You said The Rock will. The Rock didn't. But Kanye did run at some level, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He was on the ballot somewhere.
You're going to, and maybe I'm feeling more comfortable because of my 4 points I just got before, but I'll give you that one. Because he ran, but did he really run, or was it just like the Republican operatives who put him on the ballot? I mean, when they looked at all the, you know, all these like bogus signatures, and the people who sponsored to put him on the ballots were clearly Republican, and the desire was to draw away some degree of the African-American vote in United States and various places, and so therefore maybe hamper the ability of Biden to run or win in those given states. It didn't have any impact whatsoever, but he was on ballots in places.
So he did run.
Yeah, you get that.
We're getting towards the end. Why don't I play the clip and then we'll discuss this one.
Okay.
One dude doesn't last eight.
See, I'm gonna go the opposite. I'm gonna go July.
Okay. Oh, well, that's unlike you.
Because I think there'll be at least there'll be somebody who he puts in total mistake, whether it's because he's trying to make other people happy.
You've told me.
Offered you the opportunity. I even like invited you back to a shorter distance and then I went even shorter.
June. Yeah.
You know, look at what's going on with the transition team where they're changing their minds every 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I think they're going to end up with somebody in one of these spots.
So you're saying July?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's okay. I'm going to say September.
I got tired of writing these things down. We have to save this recording.
Right.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
Are we like totally pegging the limits there? Are we blowing?
All right. So that was the discussion we had. That it was a double part question. It was how many cabinet secretaries would he burn through? And then how long until the first head rolled? Now, we'd limited cabinet secretaries to the 15. If you go to Wikipedia, they're like the 15 big ones, basically secretary of state, secretary of this, and then attorney general counts as a secretary level one. So it was only the top people. We'd both predicted a high number in a 4 year span.
Yeah, I think what you had said was the prior highest was 23.
Yes.
And then so we kind of worked off of that.
You said 24. I said 28. He actually went with 24. You were correct on the number.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And then in terms of
before you leave that a second, though, like even though I end up getting the win on that one, I will tell you that when you look at the broader picture, so that my 24 is just one over the next highest.
Right.
But when you look at the bigger picture, like I sent you the link before. It's in Brookings put something out where it's basically it's more than just the 15. It's people who have like some significance in policy decisions and things like that. It's through the roof. Like he cranked through so many of those people. It's well beyond the other people. So it's much more in the character of your 28. So not a point, but like a pat on the back.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I remember when I went to Wikipedia to double check this, I was actually shocked at the number of people. There are a whole load of positions where the person who the first person confirmed kept the job for the whole time. Whether it was Betsy DeVos, who was in there the whole time.
Right.
Elaine Cho, transportation, Mitch McConnell's wife, in there the whole time. Dr. Ben Carson, in there the whole time.
I think it all had to do with the degree to which you could piss him off by, like, making some statement somewhere that even, would be contrary. Whereas you couldn't really do that at HUD and education. Like, you were just – there wasn't enough for you to do that would offend the president.
Well, even Secretary of State, which is normally – because it's quite a high-pressure job, a lot of travel, that tends to have – while it's a very prestigious job, it tends to have quite a lot of turnover in general. I mean, he had Rex Tillerson and then Mike Pompeo. So I don't want to sit here and suddenly say that there was a whole load of stability. But within the confines of our original sort of prediction, at the very highest level, it was relatively stable. But you're right. At the next level down, where I think the system doesn't always mean you have to confirm people. You can just appoint people.
Right. And he did have a lot of acting things. You know, like, there's a lot of people who never got confirmed.
Right.
A lot of people are in acting roles, but we'll give him credit for those because whatever.
You were on the money with how long someone would last. Rex Tillerson lasted, what was it, for 6-7 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't. I think the minute he called him a moron, the time it was game over for Rex Tillerson at the. But you said that. So the first dude only lasted 7 months. And I think it was either Rex Tillerson, but I think Rick Perry at Energy wasn't too far behind. He didn't stick it out for too long either.
Yeah. And, you know, the first big firing he did was of Michael Flynn, who was the national security advisor. And that was February.
Yeah. You
know? But that one was against his wishes. You know, in other words, Flynn had been found to have lied to Pence in the interviews, and I think the people pressured him enough. If that had happened again, like years later, you know, the last year, he wouldn't have fired him. It was early enough in there where he was like, well, I guess I'll fire the guy, because there, you know, Flynn became an advisor to Trump in this home stretch here, and was advocating martial law, like imposing martial law in terms of the voting kind of thing. He's also a big QAnon guy. I don't even want to get into that whole thing, but.
So let me see. The very last one was his approval rating. Well, let's do this, and then I'll play the last clip, because then we can sort of wrap up, because I have some thoughts about how this whole thing has gone over 4 years. I said his peak would be at the start. I'm not sure what your answer was.
Yeah, I don't know if I had an official answer, but...
I think by sort of the combined, like 538, do those sort of combined polls of polls to get a number. Right. He had a 45% approval rating at the start, and I presume that would be as good as it got. But I was surprised that in like February of this year, before COVID came, you know, with some of the things he'd done to the economy, he'd got it up to 49%. I think he is still the only president to never cross the 50% threshold at any time.
I think that's
even
right now.
I think even Carter, who people tend to like in the last 60 years, people tend to finger Carter as the worst president ever. Even his approval rating, there were moments when it was over 50%, but Trump never crossed that barrier.
No, but I'm going to give you a little more credit than you deserve, because it went 45 and it came back up. But really, when you look at that 538 composite, 2 days after inauguration, it was up at 47.8% or something, basically 48%. So that was the highest. So it was like, I'm not sure that like the day of inauguration is really the fair. Oh, we just could pin you because there's enough variability on a day-to-day basis when you average out these polls. So I still think it's your thing is right in the sense that he never got higher than his sort of starting week, let's say. Right. You know?
I mean, and it's interesting too. And again, and you've said that we try not to be political, and I don't want to upset anyone when I make the statement that I'm about to make. But the interesting thing is, and I know there is no correlation between these two things, but Trump, like George W. Bush in 2000, is a president elected on what do they call it when you actually lose the popular vote? They call it a minority president. There actually is a term that they throw around for that. But what I'm saying is Trump's approval rating,
popular majority,
very much reflects the people who voted for him. And what I mean, what I'm saying by this is Trump never got 50% of the vote in either election. I don't think it's an accident that his approval rating, Trump didn't lose any supporters and he never got any new ones. And he will forever be.
He did lose some supporters.
Okay.
He lost people, you know, like, there's definitely, but he didn't gain people.
So let me see.
You know, one of the interesting things is, you know, like that voting thing, everybody, you know, it's like when he called his original election a landslide. It's just like by no measure is it a landslide of anything. Like even the electoral, like he kept calling it electoral college landslide. And it's just, it's one of those things. I don't even understand why he's claiming he would say it's, you know, the greatest Republican landslide. And you like, listen, Reagan had like every single state in his election. Basically.
I think Reagan was like 436 or something.
So I don't know why, like, he would say that stuff. But Mitch McConnell just recently, I think this week, was basically saying things like, it wasn't actually even that close, this election. I mean, like, lost by what, 7 million votes in the popular vote. And even in the Electoral College, although like you could say, listen, it was almost like a 20,000 vote swing when you take those individualized states. And but they had to go differently in three different states, like in order to like make up that amount. You know, like the 20,000 voters had to be perfectly distributed in three different states for him to have won the whole thing. So that's his point. Now, Mitch McConnell is busy trying to like bury Trump as much as possible. He's really hoping that, you know, he can take control of the Republican Party and leave Trump behind. We'll see how successful he is. I was going to say, by the way, I'm sorry if this wrecks your little end thing, but hopefully not, was whether we should be doing new predictions. And I thought about whether we should do some predictions about, I don't mean for Biden, but for Trump, like 4 years from now. And then basically after listening to our optimism and how it came out, I do not want to make any predictions. Because if I was to make some predictions now, they would be optimistic, which only means it will end up worse than I think.
All right, let me play our last clip.
When he first did his Apprentice show, I used to watch it all the time. And I thought
it was a Family Night staple.
A Family Night staple, which is, that's another show. But the more it got on, and the more he failed to fire people who deserved it, and then the more he...
It got very goofy.
I'm like, you know something? This show kind of stinks. I see his political career mirroring his TV career.
Yeah.
At the start, you're going to go, oh, it's pretty interesting. There's some stuff happening.
By the end, Gary Busey's your director for national security.
And I'm like, yes. That one's going in the clips. Yeah.
But to tie the joke, by the end of The Apprentice, Gary Busey's in there. By the end of his presidency, you've got, 1,000 people invading the Capitol and you know, breaking things down and getting killed.
So this was sort of my sort of serious point just about Donald Trump, the persona. And I say that because I do feel that Trump for the last 40 years has been a public persona, a classic New York Post is it the New York Daily News? What's the tabloidy sort of gossip page? Is it Page Six? Is that in the Post or the New York Daily News?
Page Six. I can't remember. Daily News, I think.
Trump, again, forget the politics of it. Trump has spent his life being a career public persona, and yet when you actually analyze all the different sort of chapters in his story, they all go the same way. They begin with a lot of noise and a lot of talk and a lot of prediction. At some level, there's actually quite a bit of success. And then he's not a dude. This is why I was so wrong with my would he resign before getting impeached. They always go downhill. He never moves on when he's at the top. And what I mean by that is the USFL thing. The USFL for a while was a legitimate. Yeah. The NFL were worried about the USFL. Trump overplayed his hand. They won the court case. They got damages of $3. Airlines, casinos.
They kept Herschel Walker's support.
Yeah. All these things. Yeah. All these. Will Herschel Walker run? All these things start big, and then they all kind of end the same way. And his presidency, and it ain't funny when thousands of people are invading the Capitol. I hate to say it. In terms of a story, that's his most compelling climax to a chapter of his career. Right. And I don't mean that. I'm trying not to sort of be throwaway about it. But normally he just sort of peters out and claims bankruptcy, and then you don't hear from him for a couple of weeks, and then he's on to the next thing. What is it? I mean, his airline went completely belly up at the end. He had the shuttle routes between New York and D.C., which back in the 80s.
I think it was the former Eastern Airlines shuttles or whatever he had taken over. And then it became, I think it got folded into US Air or something. But
I mean, the casinos, it was the centerpiece of Atlantic City. And then Atlantic City in the 90s just went in the dumper. Do you know what I mean?
Well, even with his name on it, like, I mean, he was already out of it with his name still on it because he had to settle up with the bankers and basically give up all the control.
And it's interesting, you know, so much as this has been about, you know, Trump, the TV persona. I still remember when The Apprentice first came on. It was interesting. It was quite compelling viewing for a while. Like, you know, but then by the end of it, you're right. It's Celebrity Apprentice and Gary Busey is beating, you know, Evander Holyfield or Lennox Lewis or whatever it may be. Do you know what I mean? It all just sort of.
And that's going to happen some to some of his business stuff here too, right? Like, so the Trump Hotel in D.C., you know, he took over before he was president, the old post office building, which was a big deal. And, you know, people complain about time, but it's already talking about how they're going to get out of that. You know, they don't own it. They basically have a deal to run it.
Right.
They don't the building kind of thing, but they're already talking about getting out, and it's understandable because who's going to go stay at there anymore? I mean, like, listen, for all put aside like our own biases, but DC generally speaking is a fairly liberal town, and you know, I just don't think there's going to be a ton of people flocking to it when Trump is not president. You know, like, there's not much reason for a bunch of people to use the Trump Hotel. Like, every time you go and meet with Biden, where you'd be like, hey, or meet with other administrators, and this, are you going to go to the Trump Hotel? It wasn't doing that great to begin with, and but they'll almost certainly want to get out of that deal. Plus, they'll find an opportunity to try to screw the government over on that.
Before we actually anoint the winner of the Trump predictions, and this will be added to our lifetime record, which I think I am like 2-7-1 on in our prediction shows, mainly the summer movie preview. Let me ask you a question. We're not going to make predictions, but do you think he will encounter serious legal difficulties at a state level?
Yes. Like, jail, I don't know. But I mean, there's going to be litigations and claims, and he's going to have to deal with a lot of fights there where people are coming after him. It could be a lot of these things are really claims against the Trump businesses.
Yeah.
You know, so there could be like the New York attorney general's all over this stuff with like tax exemptions and how he's dealing with his taxes and, you know, nonprofit status and things like that. And I think it's going to come up all the place. Also, like a lot of these banks, you know, what you saw,
he's up to his ears in it.
To be honest, I mean, the whole riot insurrection stuff really did some serious brand damage.
Yeah.
Because now, like before, people like the banks could have stuck with him, but now like all the businesses are getting so much pressure to distance themselves from him that I think even I forget that I'm blanking out on the international bank that provides him a lot of his money. But for his businesses, they're already kind of like, we're going to back up a little bit here. And it's going to be real hard to convince your board that you should get into bed with on a business with Trump anymore.
It is interesting. You
just because
the word
of public pressure, you know, just to forget about like Trump himself, although, you know, you could basically always say, well, listen, a lot of banks had walked away from him already just because he was a bad risk. But you're just going to get everybody in the world is going to be coming out after your business. Not everybody. Let's just say half of the people in America come after your business. That's just not good business. Like, you want to make most people happy, and it's going to be easier if they avoid him.
I want to give the guy some credit. You just used the word there that spurred a thought in me. And again, I'm not suggesting that his story within American life is anywhere near its finish. And again, I'm not talking about in politics. I'm just talking about in general. Trump has spent his career. He's become a brand, and you use that word, you know, his brand has taken a bit of a pounding. Trump is this amazing, in that very classic, and I say this now as someone who's come to this country from another country, this sort of American dream type thing. Trump hasn't really actually done, he's not, you know, Henry Ford made Ford Motor Company the greatest automotive builder in the world. Trump's done all kinds of things. And you can list them all, but ultimately, his whole career has been about creating just this sort of generic brand. And I find it interesting that, you know, in a strange way, you know, we can talk about his businesses and hotels and this, that, and the other. But in a strange way, the biggest asset for Trump is his brand. That's why you're able to run for president without having any kind of legislative resume to run on, because he has this brand that just sort of, his career has been about trying to equate his name with success.
Which is, again, so that's an interesting spot as I think about that.
Because the MyPillow guy is making the best MyPillows. Do you know what I'm saying? Trump, I don't know. Trump is, well, it's far more of this sort of generic, yeah, success. But in what?
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a leading real estate dude. He's not a top construction guy.
It's got, I mean, that's the one thing, people, like the rich people want to go to his golf courses because they're good golf courses and resorts. And a bunch of them are just really branded and run. They're not really owned properties. But I, as you think about this now, if when he had, when the election was over, if he had just said, hey, we put up the good fight, we shook up the world, you know, a lot of things have changed. I think, you know, we've really awakened something, and he rode off into the sunset. His businesses would do much better as a result of that. You know, like it would give license to a wider swath of people to deal with his businesses, which really, it's interesting to think about, because part of this stuff was, did he just do the presidency because of the brand? Was it designed to brand build?
Yes.
Well, if so, he lost the plot in the last 4 months. Like, because, so maybe it wasn't, maybe it was just power, you know, maybe it was just glory, and he would rather fight for another term of the presidency and try to find his way into it than he would save the business for his family or whatever it is. But, you know.
So I'm going to give, this is my final pronouncement on Donald Trump, the politician. What began, in my opinion, as a deeply cynical exercise, well, the problem was he started to believe it.
Yeah.
Whereas the true cynic would have done exactly what you've said is, well, the run's over. Let me get back to making loads and loads of money.
Yeah, let me use this to make a lot of money. Not just get back to it. Literally, I should be able to make more money on the back end than when I came in. And it wasn't like, you know, that great to begin with, you know. I
mean, and somewhere along the line, he lost his cynicism and self-awareness.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very strange. But I mean, he just really loved rallies, I think. I just loved being out there and him, like, everybody yelling and cheering and spitting COVID around the room. So, and again,
you know, I hate to say this. Well, the YMCA isn't even one of the, it is one of the great one hit wonders of the 70s, but it ain't that great because it's been used by everyone else.
I don't even get, like, so, like, you know, the thing when he took off, they YMCA and then they played My Way as his plane was taking off. Well, My Way, at least you could say,
yes,
it's got a sense of, like, you know, it's fitting. I don't understand what YMCA has to do with anything.
No, I know.
Like why, other than the fact that it has a beat, why did they pick that?
I know. So basically, because it was staffed in the same, the music department was staffed in the same way everything else was staffed by people who really didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, I can't.
All right, that. So who won the predictions?
I did.
Oh, okay.
So it's 13-7. If you can't discount the 4 back to a 1, it'd be 10-7.
Did we get any? What was it? Just in general, we did have a couple, about 30%. We both whiffed on. I'm trying to think between us how accurate we were.
I mean, we were actually, even despite that point difference, we were pretty darn consistent. Like, probably more things we agreed on than we disagreed. There was a good 20 some odd 25 categories. Is there any overarching theme of, like, where we were right and where we were wrong? I don't know.
No, but I think to your point, we were wrong in that we attempted to evaluate it at some rational political level.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, certainly we didn't have all our facts together, but there was, like, a sense of, okay, there'll be normal checks and balances on this stuff. And little did we know that all the guardrails were off.
I'm going to make a final prediction. This will be our highest rated show ever, because I'm going to put Trump in the title. And at some moment, if you put Trump in the title, I've said this from the other two shows that we both had Trump in the title. Once you put Trump in the title, as you've always said, Russian bots, whoever, everyone listens to.
Yeah, well, and the addition of being on Spotify is another search thing that people, if people search for Trump on Spotify, hopefully this doesn't result in any death threats.
Yeah.
This is really a comedic podcast, people.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it for this week, yeah?
Yeah.
This has been the United Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now, On YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.